the government of Kenya is taking steps to make agriculture a mandatory subject taught in schools. The argument? Teaching young Kenyans about the economics and science of farming would better position young people to choose careers in agriculture, an area of need in that country. Kenya is not alone in the idea. Australia has considered it, along with Jamaica. Here in the U.S., the idea has never taken off, despite the aging demographics of U.S. farmers and a decline in the number of farms. Our next guest is passionate about agri-science education and why it matters here in Wisconsin. Roger King is the Agri-Science and Future Farmers of America advisor for Holman School District, where he's worked for 32 years. He was selected as the 2016 Teacher of the Year and the 2012 National Agri-Science Teacher of the Year. He and his wife operate a small farm in Holman. Roger, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much.
Well, Roger, make the case for us. Why would you like to see more agriculture taught in our schools?
Well, the statistics kind of speak for themselves in regards to knowing that we have a need for agricultural people to replace the jobs that we have, or currently the needs that we will need in the future for the jobs we have. Wisconsin Ag Facts are basically telling us right now that in about 2020, we're going to be looking to need somewhere around 132,000 employees will be needed to fill that job need just in agriculture. And my perspective on why we need those people to fill the jobs are, I think agriculture is charged with feeding the world and providing food and fiber to the world. And if that doesn't occur, I think there's a lot of detrimental effects economically, and it just, I think, snowballs in a lot of directions.
From where you're watching this, do you see young people wanting to go into agriculture, even maybe it crossing their mind that a career in farming, in agriculture, is an option?
I see students interested in it. I certainly see that students have seen through the availability of ag programs in the state of Wisconsin that they're well-versed in the number of different pathways that they can get jobs in, all the way from agribusiness to food processing to power and animal science. And those pathways are all areas that those students can get a job and not necessarily be on a farm, but directly impact that agriculture community in regards to both food and fiber in the small community as well as into the larger communities and beyond. So students are well aware of that, and students are getting, you know, continually to going into those occupational areas with that diverse opportunity in other in all areas of agriculture.
Now, if we've got the students in schools studying agriculture, great. Do we have the teachers to teach them?
We don't. That's probably the bigger problem that we have in both nationwide and in Wisconsin. Last year alone, or in 2015, the statistics from the National Agricultural, the NAAE organization, we were short, or we had a 287 teacher deficit in the United States. And so that meant that either positions were filled with people that were non-licensed teachers, or the programs didn't even get offered. So is it a small impact, 287? Well, if you put 100 to 200 students in that program, it can be compounded pretty largely.
We're talking to Roger King from the Holman School District. He does agricultural education there, works with FFA, the Future Farmers of America, talking about agricultural education in our schools. He would like to see more of it. Roger, what does this look like when you teach a class, when other people teach classes? What do students do? What do they see?
Well, when we provide an opportunity for students that come into our classroom, the number one thing we take and look at is, when you get involved in an agricultural education class in Wisconsin and throughout the country, we look at what we call a three-circle model. We look at classroom and laboratory instruction, something that really gives them a base of experiential learning, you know, that connects to both something, a classroom that's hands-on and engaging, inquiry-based. And then we connect that a little bit with that experiential learning, which is some type of a project-based activity, if that means learning how to grow a crop hydroponically, experimenting with a better way to grow crops organically, getting involved in a business and industry job. And then lastly, we try to really look at the leadership development of those students, because we'd like to have those students also be leaders in our community. So when you get in an ag education class in Wisconsin, it looks a lot different than maybe the regular ed classroom, because there are three components: the classroom, experiential learning, and leadership.
Suppose, Roger, I'm a student who knows I'm not going to go into agriculture or those other related careers you mentioned. What do I get out of an agricultural education class?
Well, if a student comes into my classroom and you know, rightly doesn't have an interest in agriculture, the thing that I really attribute to the value they get from me is, number one, as I continually provide them certainly that leadership development opportunity for them, because they can be in FFA and in the future maybe not be involved in agriculture. They're certainly going to get some experiential learning, because I am going to ask them to look at something you have a passion for and do some research on it and try to expand your knowledge in the area that you are interested in. And then lastly, I'm certainly going to take and look at my classroom as a very hands-on laboratory activity. I'm going to give you lifelong learning skills, things that help you be a great problem solver, things that you can do in the classroom that will make you very productive in the workforce. I want you to take and be able to see the big picture and contribute in any avenue of career that you're looking at.
You know, Roger, a while back on the show for our music series of all things, I was talking to a band leader from Rock County who also works on his family's farm, and he talked about how high-tech farming is nowadays. People think it's this rustic, sort of old-timey thing, but he talked about using drones and these really high-tech computer-controlled, moisture sensors and irrigation systems. Is farming an opportunity to give people training in technology and the other STEM fields, for that matter, that everybody's talking about wanting more of?
Without a doubt. I mean, agriculture is, I think, prime, you know, the area to take and look at that. When students ask me about, well, what's agriculture, Mr. King, how do you look at that? And I say, well, to me, there's three avenues of agriculture that we have. We have technology-centered agriculture, just as you spoke, those areas of agriculture that are looking at robotics and the high-end things that are, realistically, we are trying to make agriculture more productive. The statistics speaks for themselves. The amount of beef cattle that are in this country, you know, maybe down from what they were, but we're growing them faster. We're growing them more efficiently. We're growing them on less land and those kind of things. But then we also look at organic agriculture for those that really are looking at that avenue of agriculture, because there's a niche of individuals that want that particular agriculture, which has to use another avenue of technology and looking at good testing equipment and making sure that things are growing well based on soil nutrients and all those kinds of things. And then you have the traditional agriculture that kind of blends the same. I need to be efficient, so I use some of the technology, but at the same time, I'm really a steward of the land and those kind of things. And so as you look at those things, agriculture really brings about the avenue for students to, boy, I can take that whole thing to be an operator of a drone, so I can take and look at field scouting, or I can take and be looking at the other end and putting my safety glasses on and going into a laboratory and doing a DNA test so that I made great selection, a job in selecting the next animal that I want to have bred to my herd.
And do you do a lot of cross training with other teachers at the school? I mean, farming, you could see obviously a lot of biology opportunities there, chemistry, probably math. If you look at, you know, the budget of a farming business, you could get into the social sciences too, with all the social issues related to farming and agriculture. Do you have that kind of teamwork there?
It is. I mean, in fact, prior to getting on the interview here, one of our math instructors was down here for about an hour, and we were talking about the class that we're teaming together and sharing experiments that we're looking at that help to take in what we call bring meaning to math, meaningful science, the things that really bring the other areas of curricula to a meaningful level. That educator said to me, and he, as he was sitting and we were talking, he says, I'm writing a letter to the parents and saying, if I can't tell you why this concept in math is important, I shouldn't be teaching it. And so to me, he's using the agricultural classroom as that laboratory because he sees all the connections related to it. And obviously those pathways that we have, both from plants, animals, and resources, just continually connect those. Science the same way. I mean, we have a hydroponic greenhouse here, and it's constantly, you know, testing and changing those kind of things. So, you know, how does the water, you know, work for things, and, you know, all the things that we have to do to grow an efficient crop. So, yeah, it's connecting to the other areas is a continuum, and I'm fortunate enough to have, you know, a math department that's coming down and saying, we need to change how we deliver math.
We're talking with Roger King. He's the AgriScience and FFA, that's Future Farmers of America, advisor in the Holman School District. We're talking about whether or not agriculture should be a required subject in our schools. And we want to know what you think at 800-642-1234. Do you think agriculture, AgriScience should be a required subject for kids in school? Or at least do you want to see more of that kind of education? Did you learn about it when you were in school? What do we lose when children growing up don't have agricultural literacy? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. Roger King stays with us now. He's the AgriScience and Future Farmers of America advisor in the Holman School District. We're talking about whether or not agriculture should be a required subject in our schools. And we want to know what you think at 800-642-1234. Do you want more farming, more agriculture programming in schools here in Wisconsin? Is there time in the school year to make that happen? Do you teach this in your school? Or are your kids taking classes like this? Did you take it in schools if you're getting ready to go back to school yourself? Would you like to see this? 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go right to our callers. Kathy is with us in Catawba. Kathy, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Yeah, I definitely would like to see more agriculture classes. My oldest son was able to take had ag class up here, and then they discontinued the ag class, and we're among a group of parents that really struggled to try to get them to reconsider, to consider the ag classes as one of the science requirements. And they just figured there aren't enough kids interested in ag and discontinued the program, and it's really a shame.
Kathy, thank you so much for sharing that. Roger, is that the trend, you think, fewer of these, or are you starting to see a revival of agriculture education?
Well, I think the potential for the potential for our agriculture classes is out there, and there are schools that are requesting that, but again, we are looking at that supply line. You know, we are still really struggling with a supply line of educators that have a true agricultural education, degree in teaching the agricultural classes. I mean, bringing in a science educator to teach agriculture is closely related, but it's not directly related to the curriculum based on the methodologies, pedagogy, things that we have, and so on. So it really isn't the same kind of delivery. And as far as the science equivalency credit is concerned, the state of Wisconsin, Department of Public Instruction, has a process set up where we can crosswalk with the science standards in Wisconsin and have those classes considered a equivalent credit in science in a variety of different areas. And there's a number of schools in Wisconsin that have that completed.
Thanks so much for that call. We'll go next to Grace with us in New Glarus. Grace, hi.
Hello. Thanks very much for this show. Roger, thank you for the work that you're doing. And I think your previous caller, Kathy, I totally feel her pain about the agricultural classes being taken out of her son's curriculum. I actually lived on a ranch when I was very young. We raised beef cattle, horses. My grandfather also raised all sorts of crazy birds back in the 50s, emus and rheas and cranes from Africa and all sorts of stuff like that. But we later, while I was in high school, I lived in an area that was primarily rural. There were some enclaves of higher income housing developments. When our high school finally put a couple of ag classes in when I was a senior, some of the people who lived in the hoity-toity areas thought that was ridiculous. And I looked at one of these women and I said, not everybody is going to go to college. Many of these kids are growing up on fifth-generation family farms, orchards, and such. Why shouldn't there be classes that will help prepare them to take over their family's farms, learn how to work on the equipment, and learn more about orchard production and so on and so forth?
Grace, thanks a lot for that call. Appreciate that. And Roger, the two aren't mutually exclusive, right? Going into college and working on a farm or working in the agricultural industry.
Well, today's technology that we have and so on is, you know, we have farm industry short course that is specifically targeted to students and to go on to want to do or get involved in production agriculture on maybe a family farm or their own, you know, work out on a farm at some point that is offered at UW-Madison. And it is that production-based thing because the knowledge that you need to be efficient in agriculture needs to, you know, be continually growing in that particular individual. I'll share a story with you. I went to take a group of our students on a field trip, and we wanted to see a robotic milking system. And so this gentleman walked in, you know, showed us his robotic system, and I said, by the way, could you tell me your background and what kind of things? He says, I have a degree in math and physics. And he says, I still think I'm not prepared enough to take work in the world of agriculture because it's so it changes so fast. And the technology. I mean, we have to get specialists. It's kind of like asking the general public today to take your car that doesn't start and fix it yourself. Well, agriculture has come to that point, too, where we have so many high-level technology things that, to save money, you learn it on your own or you buy that equipment. Well, it's not practical for somebody to have their own backyard auto shop to clean, you know, fix their car. And so agriculture is kind of in that same mode of things. We need people to value that and continue to support that production agriculture. And, I think it's just really a positive thing is continually looking at opportunities for students in high school that relate to agriculture.
Grace, thanks for that call and for sharing your experience. We're talking to Roger King from the Holman School District. He is involved with agriculture education there, a big advocate for it, says we need more of it in our schools. Back to our callers now. John is on the line in Oconomowoc. John, hi.
Hi, how are you today?
Good. What do you think?
Good. I'm definitely a big proponent for more agricultural education. I am a dairy farmer. I'm actually out sitting on my tractor right now as we speak. Agricultural education is very important because as a farmer, I realize we need to have very, very smart, intelligent, well-educated people to continue to move agriculture ahead. But also, just as importantly, you know, I believe it's less than 1% of the population in our country is engaged in producing food. And we need to do a better job of educating the other 99% about where our food comes from and how it's produced and that sort of thing. And so even if a high school student didn't go on to a career in agriculture, they'd have a better understanding of the food system, how it works, and how things find their way from the field to our table.
John, thanks so much for the call. And bringing up that point, because that's something we haven't gotten into, Roger, and this is something that people, I think, argue for this kind of agricultural education, is we're disconnected from our food. We get it from a store. We have no vision of how it's created for us. Is that part of the goal here?
Well, I think it is. We always talk about this, we want to learn the basics. At what point do we take and not look at the basics of agriculture in our world being a part of school? I mean, I want you to learn the basic math. Well, what about basic agriculture? What about basic home care? What about basic financial literacy and those kind of things? And so it continues there. And I'm a believer that, you know, smart consumers make smart decisions. Well, we've got most consumers that three times a day are have to make a smart decision on the food they have in their, you know, on a daily basis. You know, we're making those decisions when we're buying things and what have you. And so if we equate it from that standpoint, we continually need to look at that literacy kind of thing, because we are, like one of the callers, there's generations removed from the farm, and we're losing touch on how it's produced and so on.
John, thanks for the call. Roger, just briefly, because we're almost out of time, if a school district administrator, teacher, is listening right now as they set up the classroom and thinking, we need this, what is a good first baby step they could take in a school that doesn't do agricultural education?
I think a baby step is to start to advocate with your community on having the availability of the value of that to their community. The value meaning, what direction do we go? I look at it from the standpoint of how can you look at how you change the delivery of all the curricular areas. You look at how it connects to math, science, social studies, and all the other areas, and it brings meaning to all those areas. And it brings in STEM. It brings in all of the things that we advocate for, that higher test scores, because we do lifelong or long-term learning projects and those kind of things. It's nothing but a positive value to a school district when you start looking at it from the integration to other subjects, test scores, attendance, because there's a valued connection. And certainly you can't forget, if you add FFA, the leadership component.
Roger, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
That's Roger King, AgriScience and Future Farmers of America advisor in the Holman School District. He joined us to talk about teaching the next generation of farmers. You can still share your thoughts on agriculture education on the Central Time Facebook page. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up after 7, it's this week's installment of Storytelling with Snap Judgment. Tonight, we'll hear about the feeling you get when your favorite songs, the songs of your youth, are introduced as oldies. That's coming up tonight after 7 on Snap Judgment.
First, as newsrooms cut staff and the industry tries to stay solvent in an increasingly fractured media landscape, our next guest wonders if it's all worth it. Bill Leaders is an award-winning reporter and editor. He's the former Money and Politics Director for the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. He's president of the Wisconsin Freedom of Information Council and associate editor at The Progressive magazine.
And he's served as a mentor for young journalists and broken big stories here in the state of Wisconsin. Bill Leaders recently wrote a piece for Milwaukee Magazine asking, is journalism still worth it? A question he asked himself, and he joins us now. Bill, welcome back.
Good to be here.
Well, Bill, you gave a talk about the top 10 good things about being a journalist back in the fall to a group of young, civic-minded high school students, but that it sounds like it launched you on this question, well, what would I really tell someone if they wanted to know, should I go into journalism, and I'm a young person? I don't want you to answer that yet. I want to go through some of the things you consider, but I want to ask you first, what is the biggest change that you've seen for journalists today that was different when you began your career?
Well, things are unpredictable. You can't count on loyalty from the publications and the news outlets that you may be loyal to. There are constant cuts in newsrooms and broadcast as well as print. And, you know, it's just not a secure place of employment. The talk that I gave was for a group called Junior State of America, and it was actually in the State Assembly. It was really cool with speaking from the floor of the Assembly, and the place was packed. And I gave a speech about what was good about being a reporter, some of the things that I thought were positive about how you learn to be more broad-minded, and you see things from more than one side. You get to meet interesting people. You're tapped into the news. You develop an appreciation for accuracy and a bunch of other skills that come in useful. And afterwards, one of the students who was in attendance came up to me and said she was interested in being a journalist and asked if I had any advice. And thinking about it later, I probably should have said, don't do it. It's not worth it. You shouldn't be getting into this profession.
You really think you should have said that to her?
I think that's a defensible thing to say. At least people who are going into the profession need to know that it's tremendously difficult to get a job. And once you do have a job, you may find that it's a terribly unsecure position. particularly after you've demonstrated loyalty to an organization and you've acquired a good deal of expertise, after you've been around for a couple, 3 decades doing the hard work of being a reporter, you become more expendable because you get paid a little bit more than some younger person who they can hire off the street. So those are the people they go after. When newsrooms look to make cuts, they try to go after their most senior staff because they get paid slightly less terribly. So, you know, that's something people need to know, that if you are loyal to your organization and you acquire a lot of experience, you're going to make yourself more expendable.
As we said, you're a veteran journalist. I'm surprised in a way to hear you saying this, because the press, the media, is a check and balance on the judicial and the legislative branch of the government. Doesn't somebody have to do that?
Oh, sure. And I think that, you know, I come around to the to a conclusion that it's a great job. It's the same thing as I was able to explain to him. There's a lot of really good things about it, and it's an exciting place to be. And the people who do get thrown out on the street, so to speak, after years of loyalty to an organization, the ones I've spoken to, don't regret that they went into the profession, and they just would love the chance to do one more story, to be part of people's lives in times of triumph and tragedy.
Now, and there's a story that we talked about in Central Time. I want to ask you about a new poll from the Media Insight Project found that only 6% of Americans trust the media. And I gather that's on par with the approval rating for Congress, which is considered pretty abysmal. What is your take on why that number is so low?
That makes me angry. I think that it's tremendously unfair to the profession that it is not recognized as an accurate and trustworthy source of information. It is. By and large, you can believe just about everything you read in the newspaper. People take care to get things right. Every journalist I know cares about getting things right. Every journalist has tremendous consequences if they get things wrong, even the littlest things. And yet people beat up on the profession all the time. I think a lot of it is just straight up ignorance. They're too damn lazy to read the newspaper, and they want to blame it on someone else. So they blame it on the reporter and say, oh, it's all a bunch of lies, you can't trust them. Well, that's crap. That's not true. It's not fair. The journalists I know don't deserve that. And maybe we need to push back a little against this ignorance in society, the people who want to beat up on the media because they're too damn lazy to read the newspaper and to educate themselves through the available local press.
And that number, that 6%, it's low, and I wonder if that's something that you see as being a new development, maybe tied to this presidential election cycle, or do you think this has been something that has been, you know, the trust steadily eroding over the years as you see it?
Well, you see in this election cycle, and I've written about this separately, how candidates are making a target of the media, particularly Donald Trump has really singled out the media as a villain and has actually, you know, instigated harassment of media members in his who come to watch him speak, and he does it because he is so untethered to the truth. He lies with such dexterity that he can't stand the idea of being held accountable for the things he says, and it's the media that's doing it to him. So he has to discredit the media so that he continue to say whatever he feels like, whether or not it's true.
You were challenged on that on your Milwaukee Magazine piece. One comment, if you care to read the comments, I don't know if you have, but
Never
I'm going to share one with you now. And one commenter saying, well, what are you getting in here playing that this is only the Republicans? As if the Bernie Sanders campaign and the Hillary Clinton campaign haven't done the same thing.
Oh, sure.
What do you say to that?
Oh, I'd say that's right. I think politicians across the board like to scapegoat the media because the media seeks to hold them accountable. And I agree with many of the criticisms that people would make of the Democratic candidates when it comes to deflecting responsibility by blaming the messenger.
We're talking with Bill Leaders right now, associate editor at The Progressive Magazine and a whole lot more, talking about his recent piece in the Milwaukee Magazine, asking the question, doing some soul searching and asking, is it worth it to be a journalist today? And Bill, getting back to you, what do you think, if you could talk to someone right now, one of these people who say they don't trust the media is not trustworthy, obviously something you feel passionately about, what would you say to them to try to convince them that they were wrong, that this is an institution, as it were, that deserved more trust?
Well, I say this in the piece, in the Milwaukee Magazine essay, and I've said it before, that if you if you have 2 hours of your life to spare educating yourself in a way that you will never forget, go to an event that you know is going to be covered in the media, whether it's a visiting speaker that you know is going to get media attention, some dignitaries coming through town, even go to the baseball game that you know is going to get written up in the paper. Go to an event, debate, a day of court testimony. Take copious notes, write up what you've seen, and then the next day compare what you've written to what appears in the paper, and you will never look down your nose at a newspaper reporter again.
So basically you're saying this job is hard.
No, I'm saying the job is hard, and also the people who do it are good. They get things right. They say things in a sensible way. They're clear. They've learned to communicate an event to a general audience in a sophisticated but simple way. You know, try it. You're not going to be as good as the people that you think aren't any good at all.
I want to quote a line from your piece here. You say, today's newspapers have become places of pain. That's such a strong sentence. When I read that, I had to stop and read it over again. I assume maybe you're overstating it a little, but are you? Flesh that out. Why are they places?
When I wrote that line, I actually laughed because I think that's just kind of a funny way to put it. But yeah, there's a lot of pain in news organizations. You know, my friends who work for daily newspapers, you know, they have this insecurity. They have this this sense that first of all, they're not respected as much as they should be. Second, their jobs are not as secure as they should be. And then they're just not in a great place. They see their coworkers getting laid off, and they know, you know, they're offered these voluntary buyouts. You know, should they take it so someone else doesn't have to get forced out of the job? It's painful for management too. You know, I don't doubt that being a manager in a newsroom these days is a very painful job to have. You have to throw people out of work because that's the order that's coming down from above from the people who run newspapers, some of whom should not be allowed within 1,000 miles of a newsroom.
Is it different for you? You work for a magazine now. Is it different if you're at an online publication, a magazine, something like that?
Well, you know, there are other kinds of other media now that have sprung into being that, you know, the dynamic is a bit different. And I'm a newspaper person. You know, even though I'm writing for a magazine now and I work for a weekly alternative as a freelance writer, you know, I'm still fundamentally committed to print. And that's an area where we've seen a lot of cutback, a lot of pain. But here's the other side of it. The people who still have those jobs are really very good. The people who are still working in print media are survivors. They've kept their jobs because they're excellent at them. And we need to have some appreciation for that. I mean, reporters do a lot more now than reporters did in the past. Now, some of that is technological. You know, when I first started as a newspaper reporter 30 years ago, if I wanted to look up an article that had appeared in the local paper like 8 months before, I'd have to, you know, bike on over to the central library and pull up the microfilm and run it through the machine until I found the article after I located it in the index. And I had to, like, print it out and pay 10 cents for the pay. You know, that's the type of stuff I would do as a reporter that now is instantaneous, that anyone can do. And you have tremendous access to information where you can, get all sorts of information at the press of a keyboard. So we do a lot more than we've ever had to do, and we do it really well.
We're talking with Bill Leaders right now, longtime Wisconsin journalist and current associate editor at the Progressive Magazine. He recently asked himself the question, is a career in journalism still worth it?
And we want to hear from you now at 800-642-1234. Why do you think the public has low trust in the media these days? Do you rely on the media? If so, which media? How do you get your news? An actual paper copy of a newspaper online from a newspaper's website somewhere else? Are you a journalist yourself? What do you think about what Bill is saying about the job? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post, find a link to Bill's article at the Central Time Facebook page. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. And we're continuing our conversation with veteran journalist Bill Leaders. He's the associate editor at the Progressive Magazine and the president of the Wisconsin Freedom of Information Council. And he recently asked himself, in a Milwaukee Magazine piece, is journalism still worth it?
You can join in at 800-642-1234. As a member of the public, do you appreciate the work that journalists do, that the media does? What could they do better? And who are they? What media are you following? Old-fashioned newspapers, their online incarnations, these newfangled web journalism sources? And if you're a journalist, tell us about your job, what you think of it. Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we're going to go right to our callers now. We've got Mark first in Suamico. Mark, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. What I was telling the screener was, I think the general public is really fighting a battle with the different sources of media that where they get their news from, or at least their perception of what is news and really what isn't news, and making that, using critical thinking and determining what is actually news and what isn't. I use my mother-in-law as an example, who lives just north of Portage, and it's a fairly remote area, and she lives by herself, and she finds herself listening to conservative talk radio, which there may be some validity in the information she's getting, but when I go to visit her periodically, what I'll get are some of these amazing stories, what she considers to be news, and I go back to, and I'm not a journalist, but I think back to the time when I was actually writing articles for a paper that I worked for, and checking sources, and, I find myself asking her, well, what sources did they, kind of cite,
Mark, thanks a lot. I want to make sure we get Bill in on this. So what do you say to that, Bill, about making sure that your sourcing is reputable and that someone has done the footwork and checked their facts?
Yeah, well, different media have different standards and different degrees of reliability. I think newspapers are very much at the top in terms of reliability. They do check things much more scrupulously. They have editors who are overseeing the process. They have reporters who are trained to get things right. And there's a consequence to pay if you get something wrong. Sometimes I think on cable television, people say whatever they want, and if they're totally wrong, there's no price to pay. That's not the way it is in print media. So I put a higher, I have a higher regard for the accuracy of print media than other media, but different media do things well. Like radio is the best forum for a significant discussion on an issue. If you have more than one voice and you want the interaction, it's the best medium for that. Television is the best medium for some other stories that have a visual component and where you want to show people something as well as tell them what is happening.
Mark, thanks a lot for that call. And we go next to Joan in Eau Claire. Joan, hi.
Good afternoon. I think that journalists are very important, and I'm grateful because journalists bring to light, honest journalists bring to light things that make our government officials accountable, or at least to the point where they should be. And I'd like to thank you, Mr. Leader, for what you do, because that is exactly what you do. And people like you who are honest journalists and bring these issues to the forefront.
Well, thank you. But don't thank me. Thank every journalist, every reporter, and support your local newspaper. Subscribe to your local newspaper. Support it that way. That's great. Thank you.
I wonder real quickly, Bill, what do you think the mentality of those in journalism is right now? Is it a besieged mentality? Is it as ever? How would you describe it?
Well, I will speak for myself and say that I am disgusted to some extent with the lack of respect that journalists get from certain quarters, including people like Donald Trump. I think that's just abhorrent that the people who do this job are treated as punching bags by punks like that. But overall, I think, we encounter all kinds of people. We encounter people who are tremendously grateful that we cover their issues and events and tell their stories, and we tap into that too. Gratitude is something we very often encounter in our work. So, it's all over the place.
Joan, thanks a lot for that. And we go next to Terry calling us in Green Bay. Hi, Terry.
Hello, Joan. How are you? I just wanted to comment, I'm a former radio news reporter and at a short stint in TV producing as well. And I went into journalism and, wanted to be a radio news reporter. I was told it was going to be low pay, but I did it. But, as I family grew and now I have three kids, the pay just isn't there. And, of course, the hours aren't always the greatest as well. So I think that's a big challenge right there when it comes to anyone wanting to get into that field and stay in it.
Great. Terry, thanks. Appreciate your perspective there. Terry pointing, this is not I think most cases, it's fair to say, right? This is not a high-paying field.
It's not. I was talking to someone the other day, and he said, he's talking about wanting to be a journalist. At one point, he said, I don't care about making money. I said, well, if you don't care about making money, you are in the right profession.
Is that something that could change?
I don't know. I mean, it's very competitive. A lot more people want to be journalists than can be, and so that's one of the things that depresses wages, and news organizations aren't raking in money the way that they used to, so that's another factor. I mean, there are people that come out of college and start their first journalism job who are making $24,000 a year, sometimes even less than that. It's not a good paying profession, and it probably won't be in the future. But you know what? Most of the people who do it, that's not what's driving them, and it's not something that's going to keep them away from the job and from the profession.
So, Bill, we've had this discussion. This is something that's been weighing on you. You've been mulling this over. What would you tell a high school kid, if you were being completely honest, who came up to you and said, I want to be a journalist. Should I be a journalist? Looking into your crystal ball in the future, what do you see?
I would say all of the things that I told that group of students, that there are a lot of great things about it. You get to meet people that you would never otherwise meet. You get to tell people stories. You get to be with people in these moments that are just really pivotal in their lives, when terrible things happen to them or great things happen to them, or when that one thing happens to them that they say, I need a newspaper reporter, this is wrong. You know, it's tremendously gratifying. And you have a chance to, you know, to broaden your perspective about the world. You get to meet people from all persuasions. I don't know a single journalist who is as harsh in their assessment of politicians as are the politicians themselves. We're all more broad-minded, or most of us are more broad-minded in our assessment of the people in power than the people who are actually there, who are throwing mud pies at each other to get elected. So there's a lot of good things, but you know, you need to be aware that this is a very troubled time to be a journalist. There is not job security. People get thrown out of jobs. People are asked to leave jobs. And the more experience that you have, the more vulnerable you are. So that's a big negative.
Bill, thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Good to be here.
Bill Leaders is associate editor at The Progressive Magazine, former money and politics director for the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. His Milwaukee Magazine article about the challenges facing journalists today, it's linked on the Central Time Facebook page.
I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.